I've always struggled with finding time to manage my finances. At the end of a busy week, the last thing I want to do is spend time budgeting all of my expenses or tracking down customer service teams to cancel old subscriptions I no longer use. But now I use Rocket Money, and it does all that for me. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills so you can grow your savings. Stop wasting money on the things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Washington Post. That's rocketmoney.com/Washington Post.
Today, Florida's Governor Ron DeSantis is expected to announce that he's running for president, and he's doing it on Twitter. But to win the GOP nomination, he's got to topple the frontrunner.
For months, everyone's looked at DeSantis as the most viable challenger to Trump.
Hannah Knowles is a campaign reporter for The Post.
But Trump has kind of only seemed to gain strength in recent months. I mean, I think a lot of people honestly thought his power in the party was waning earlier this year, and then he kind of made a comeback. And so DeSantis jumping in is really this defining point of, can someone actually give Trump a run for his money?
From the newsroom of The Washington Post, this is Post Reports. I'm Anahat O'Connor. I'm your guest host today. It's Wednesday, May 24th. Tonight, DeSantis will officially announce his candidacy. But before he does, we'll take a step back. We'll discuss DeSantis's rising star, his recent missteps, and how this early GOP favorite might fare on the crowded campaign trail, especially against one of his early political allies, former President Trump.
DeSantis is 44. He really entered politics with this elite resume. He went to Yale and Harvard Law School, and then he was in the Navy for a while. DeSantis was a congressman before he was governor, and he was kind of little known. He was part of the House Freedom Caucus, which includes a lot of the most conservative members of the House, but he ends up becoming more of a national name by defending Trump.
Congressman Ron DeSantis joins us now to explain.
Your take, Congressman DeSantis.
Well, I think what it's done is it's vindicated Trump and really—
He's on Fox News all the time, backing up the then president.
How does that guy then start to open an investigation involving Trump's campaign? Did they not have any other—
And made that relationship really central to his campaign for governor in 2018. He released this viral ad that showed him like reading Trump's book to his kid and telling another kid to build the wall with blocks.
Everyone knows my husband, Ron DeSantis, is endorsed by President Trump, but he's also an amazing dad. Ron loves playing with the kids.
Build the wall.
He reads stories.
Then Mr. Trump said, "You're fired." I love that part.
And Trump's endorsement was really crucial in his win in the 2018 gubernatorial election.
I'd like to introduce a true leader. And he's going to be your next governor, Ron DeSantis.
But since that 2018 election, DeSantis has really kind of built his own brand, independent of Trump, in the Republican Party. He's cast himself as this fighter against all things woke, and woke has really become this catch-all for everything that Republicans view as, you know, liberal excess in U.S. institutions.
We have maintained law and order. We have protected the rights of parents. We have respected our taxpayers, and we reject woke ideology.
And then last fall, you saw him win re-election in Florida by about a 20-point margin. And that just really solidified this idea that he was kind of the new star of the party, and maybe he was the guy who could take them forward after these really punishing losses in the midterms that a lot of people blamed on Trump.
Yeah, and it seems like there's been a lot of speculation that DeSantis could be the candidate to beat Trump in the Republican primary. What's your sense of this? How much of a challenger is he to the 800-pound gorilla in the room, which is Trump?
I think the feeling is still that, you know, if anyone can do it, it's most likely DeSantis. But he's had a tough few months where you've seen, you know, donors getting more vocally nervous. You've seen Trump just relentlessly going after DeSantis, calling him, you know, nicknames, attacking his record. And DeSantis really kind of not pushing back directly on a lot of that. I mean, I think he's in this bind where, you know, a lot of the party still loves Trump and he doesn't want to alienate those voters. And so he's trying to make the case against Trump, but he can't quite take the shots at Trump that I'm sure, you know, he and his allies would like to take. So they have to walk that fine line.
Yeah, he's sort of in a fascinating quandary. You mentioned earlier that Trump seemed to be sort of instrumental to his rise. Trump endorsed him when he ran for governor. DeSantis released these sort of fawning television ads likening himself to Trump and showing his loyalty. But how exactly is DeSantis styling himself as an alternative to Trump now that he's running against him?
Yeah, so he's started to draw some more explicit contrasts, and he's told donors, like, you know, I'm not going to swing at every shot Trump's take. I do think they're trying to be kind of strategic and really focus on policy in terms of the criticisms they're making. But basically, he's presenting himself as Trump without kind of all the drama and suggesting that he can deliver kind of a similar agenda without, you know, all these other distractions and legal troubles. And so even if he's not making that case explicitly in public, that's certainly the implication.
Hurricane Ian smashed into Southwest Florida.
One line in his stump speeches is he talks about how after a hurricane came through Florida,
it left catastrophic damage in its wake, including the destruction of the Pine Island Bridge. Local island residents were told it would take 6 months or more to restore the bridges. And so they appealed to the state for help. We took up the challenge. And 3 days later, we opened a rebuilt Pine Island Bridge.
Basically suggesting, you know, I could go send my guys to finish the border wall. And obviously he doesn't quite say it, but the border wall is this big unfinished promise that Trump made central to his campaign in 2016. And so just leaning into this idea that for all Trump's talk, there's a lot of stuff that he didn't actually accomplish in the eyes of DeSantis supporters.
So he's taken some maybe subtle, implicit shots at Trump, but he hasn't really hit back at him hard. And I wonder if that might be because he's afraid of alienating Trump's base. Could that be one reason why he's not hitting back so hard against Trump?
Yeah, for sure. They absolutely are drawing support from Republicans who still like Trump a lot. And I think that they recognize that there's a good chunk of the party that is just totally loyal to Trump and will not back another candidate over him. But they're hopeful that they can peel off those people who, you know, still look positively on the former president, but they're not totally devoted to him.
Right. Now, the other day, Tim Scott entered the race as another GOP candidate.
I'm running for president of the United States of America.
And Donald Trump welcomed him to the race and even wished him good luck. And yet, at the same time, he took a shot at DeSantis and called him unelectable, which seemed like a complete contrast. So why is Trump responding to DeSantis like this and not to other candidates in the race? Is Trump perhaps nervous about DeSantis's candidacy?
I think as much as Trump advisors project a lot of confidence right now and they point to, you know, national polling that has him way ahead, they feel really good. They have always viewed DeSantis as the most credible threat. And that's certainly what DeSantis allies would say. They'd say the fact that Trump is going after our guy shows that he is nervous and that he really does have a shot here. And yeah, absolutely. The Trump team would love for as many candidates to get in there as possible because you look at what happened in 2016. Trump won the GOP nomination after all these other GOP candidates were kind of fighting for the rest of the voters and kind of turned their fire on themselves instead of going after Trump. And so, you know, there's a lot of people in the party who do not like Trump, who do not want a repeat of that election.
Now, one of the criticisms against DeSantis has been that as a state governor, he hasn't been tested nationally. Has DeSantis taken any steps or made any political moves to try to elevate his national reputation?
I think that as a governor, DeSantis has certainly waded into issues that have made him, you know, nationally known. And he kind of, like Trump, he really does have a knack for doing things that really excite the GOP base around the country and really alarm his critics. For example, last fall, He waded into the debate over the border by actually like sending planes to fly undocumented immigrants from Texas, you know, not Florida, from Texas to Martha's Vineyard, this kind of liberal enclave in Massachusetts. And basically, I mean, DeSantis said that he was trying to kind of make a political point about the Biden administration's border policy. You know, Republicans loved it. At the same time, Democrats and human rights organizations were outraged, and they said, you know, you're using these people as pawns and the local authorities weren't prepared. He's pursued new restrictions on school curriculum, on issues like race and sexual orientation and gender identity. And while he hasn't repeated Trump's claims that the 2020 election was stolen, he certainly embraced the kind of resulting GOP push for new restrictions on voting. And he created the state elections police force that made some very highly publicized arrests last year. And that drew a lot of backlash as well, because it was mostly Black defendants, people who said that they believed they had been cleared to vote despite their felony convictions. I mean, those are just some examples of the stances he's taken that have made national headlines and really earned him a lot of admirers and a lot of critics.
Now, DeSantis has made some really controversial moves lately. He's gone after Disney, which is the state's largest employer. He signed a 6-week abortion ban. Now there's talk that some of his donors might be backing away from him. Has DeSantis sort of lost some of his shine in recent months with some of these more controversial steps that he's taken?
Yeah, I think the 6-week abortion ban in particular goes a lot further than even some Republicans would like to go in Florida. And it is out of step with public opinion there and nationally. And so, you know, that's another issue where he certainly has a lot to talk up to the GOP base, and that could serve him well in a primary. But Republicans have also started to get nervous that is he staking out these positions that will come back to bite us in the general election? And I think, you know, electability is such an important part of this primary. The GOP is coming off of some really disappointing losses last year. And part of DeSantis's pitch is that I can win the general election in these swing states where Trump has lost. And so, you know, if people start to doubt his electability, that is an issue for their kind of core pitch.
After the break, we'll dive into DeSantis's Disney problem and discuss where he stands in the polls. We'll be right back.
I've always struggled with finding time to manage my finances. At the end of a busy week, the last thing I want to do is spend time budgeting all of my expenses or tracking down customer service teams to cancel old subscriptions I no longer use. But now I use Rocket Money, and it does all that for me. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills so you can grow your savings. Stop wasting money on the things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Washington Post. That's rocketmoney.com/Washington Post.
So, Hannah, let's unpack DeSantis's battle with Disney, which has been really controversial lately. Some Republican lawmakers have even come out and questioned why DeSantis is going after Disney. And we saw that Disney seems to be fighting back. Recently, they filed a lawsuit against the DeSantis administration. Why does it seem like his approach with Disney has maybe crossed a line to some of his Republican colleagues?
So the Disney battle begins last year with this legislation that DeSantis and Republicans in Florida support to restrict discussions of sexual orientation and gender identity in public schools. And Disney opposes that legislation. And DeSantis basically looks for ways to punish them for that stance. But it really becomes a lot bigger than that fight over the schools legislation. And at this point, DeSantis really kind of cast Disney as this avatar of all things woke and how, you know, liberal ideas have overrun our institutions and our companies and schools. And that's, you know, such a big part of his pitch, you know, this year. That battle has kind of only escalated, and there's been this back and forth over an oversight board around the area that is home to Disney World, and now Disney is suing DeSantis, alleging political retaliation. And so it's really just kind of gotten bigger and bigger and bigger. And as that happens, you've seen some people in the GOP express discomfort with the back and forth here and saying, you know, can we just kind of find a way to resolve this? You know, we traditionally have been the business-friendly party. You know, does this damage our brand?
You have companies like a Disney that are going to say and criticize parents' rights. They're going to criticize the fact that we don't want transgenderism in kindergarten and first grade classrooms. If that's the hill that they're going to die on.
I do think that DeSantis's team still see this as a political winner in the primaries, and they've said that to their donors. And so I don't see them backing down from that issue, despite the criticism they've gotten from Republicans.
So as of this moment, Hannah, where exactly does DeSantis stand in the polls?
If you look at polling, Trump is far and away the front runner. DeSantis is kind of hovering around 20%. That's more than all the other potential and declared Trump challengers. But, you know, it's a long way from Trump right now. So I think the DeSantis team is hopeful that by campaigning really hard in these early primary states where the polling is less clear, you know, if they make a strong showing there, then they can gain momentum. And that's something that they can ride through the rest of the early primary states. But we're months out before that's indicative of who is going to win the nomination.
So, Hannah, we'll all be watching how this battle plays out. But I wonder, from your unique vantage point, what are you going to be keeping your eye on now that DeSantis has officially joined the race? What are you looking out for in the coming months?
I'll definitely be watching how he approaches Trump. You know, if he sharpens some of those critiques even a little bit now that he's official candidate, I think everyone will be watching to see, does DeSantis get a bump once he is officially in? Because that's what his allies are counting on. They're hoping that, you know, because he wasn't actually in the race, that some of this polling lead that Trump has developed will go away. And so I think if that doesn't happen, then they'll be more worried about his prospects. At the same time, you know, back in 2008, Hillary Clinton was the clear polling leader for a long time for the Democratic nomination, and Barack Obama ends up winning. So I think that just goes to show that anything could happen. We shouldn't count anyone out at this point.
Hannah, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Hannah Knowles is a campaign reporter for The Post. That's it for Post Reports. Thanks for listening. Today's show was produced and mixed by Ted Muldoon, with help from Eliza Dennis and Gabe O'Connor. It was edited by Monica Campbell. If you want to show your appreciation for the show, please subscribe to The Washington Post. It's a great way to support the work that we do. Go to washingtonpost.com/subscribe to learn more. I'm Anahat O'Connor. We'll be back tomorrow with more stories from The Washington Post.
The best conversations I have with my colleagues are the ones that happen when no one is looking, when we're not 100% sure yet what to write.
Hopefully, having conversations like this can help you figure out your own point of view. That's kind of our job as Washington Post opinions columnists. I'm Charles Lane, Deputy Opinion Editor.
And I'm Amanda Ripley, a contributing columnist. We're going to bring you into these conversations on a new podcast called Impromptu.
Follow Impromptu now, wherever you listen.